Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Dean's List. I'm Dean Bowen. You are listening to America Out Loud Talk Radio. We are happy to have you on board today on April 2nd. April 2nd, it's my brother's birthday. So happy birthday to my brother, David. Is he, I guess I won't drop ages. He's older than me, though. Older. And, you know, I don't know, probably wiser. Older and wiser. Also today, April 2nd, Floridians are celebrating an anniversary. Floridians observe April 2nd as, I don't know if I'm going to pronounce this right, Pascua. Pascua, Florida Day. Is it Pascua or Pascua? I will have Floridian friends who will correct me. Either way you cut it. It was today in 1513 that the Spanish adventurer Ponce de Leon made his first known landing in Florida. The first time a European explorer landed in Florida. It was Ponce de Leon. Ponce de Leon was born to a noble family in Spain. First came to the New World in 1493 along with Christopher Columbus. He showed up on Columbus's second expedition. He later conquered Puerto Rico and became its first governor. According to tradition, it was there that the Indians told him of an island to the west, blessed with not only gold, but a magical spring that restored youth and cured illness, the infamous Fountain of Youth. So it was in 1513 that the eager conquistador sailed from Puerto Rico with three ships to find the island. He was hoping to find its gold and its miraculous Fountain of Youth. On April 2nd, he stepped onto a beach somewhere near present-day St. Augustine. The exact spot is unknown. And he claimed the land for Spain. He named it Florida because he arrived at Easter time, which the Spaniards called Pascua, I'm not sure which, Pascua, Florida, which means the Feast of the Flowers. The Spaniards sailed around the southern end of Florida, which they still took to be a giant island. They had no idea it was a peninsula. And then they sailed up the west coast. Finding neither gold nor the mysterious Fountain of Youth, they returned to Puerto Rico, disappointed, dejected. However, 8 years later, Ponce de Leon was like, we're going back because I'm pretty sure the Indians told me the truth. When we can trust these Indians from Puerto Rico, and if they say there's gold and a Fountain of Youth, then by golly, there is. So he makes a second trip to Florida. This time he's determined to establish a settlement. He landed on the West Coast with some 200 men, horses, cattle, and supplies. But the Spaniards soon found themselves at war with Colusa Indians, who they were pretty, these Indians were pretty talented. And they created poisonous darts. And they shot poisonous darts at the Spaniards. And one of those poisonous darts hit Ponce de Leon. And so they had to flee. They had to retreat to Cuba, where the tough old conquistador soon died. He died from the poison. He was buried in Puerto Rico. With the words over his tomb, "Here rests the bones of a lion." So ended the legendary search for the Fountain of Youth. Bum, bum, bum. And Florida has an anniversary to celebrate. So what's the moral of the story? Maybe there's a couple morals of the story that, you know, men will do whatever it takes to find gold or do whatever it takes to reclaim youth, foolishly, I might add. Or the moral of the story could be, don't mess with Florida. Do not mess with the Floridians because they will shoot poisonous darts at you. They will take you out. Oh, I bet that's the moral that the Floridians like. There's also a moral happening in this country. There is another moral taking place, and it's unfolding in Minnesota. I'm looking at an article here entitled "Minnesota School District Affirms Students' Right to Walk Out of LGBT Lesson." All right, so Minnesota, it's the fifth largest school district in Minnesota, and they are buckling under the pressure. And they're saying, yes, okay, look, if you don't want to be a part of these lessons, parents, you can opt out. And this article is obviously coming out in wake of Biden's proclamation over the weekend, wherein, I mean, we talked about it yesterday, and you'd have to be living in a hole, hibernating, to not know what's going on here. He makes this proclamation that Resurrection Sunday is whatever day, I don't know, transgender day of visibility. We got to make sure that they're all visible. Here we are in Florida, and there are parents, not only parents, but teachers, not only teachers, but students, all three groups, and they don't want this to be forced down their throat. They're tired of it. They don't want this ramrodded right down their gullet. So a 40-page demand letter was issued from the Liberty Council. The Liberty Council is a national Christian advocacy organization, and they persuaded the Minnesota School District, which, again, this is the fifth largest district. I read somewhere in here, it's OSSEO, OSSEO. I'm going to call it OSSEO. I could be wrong. And so they demanded the school district to acknowledge the rights of these teachers, parents, and high school students to have the ability to opt out of these lessons. Liberty Council became involved at the request of local parents and teachers who were concerned about the upcoming activity, describing it as one-sided LGBT political indoctrination. A group of the teachers said that they objected to teaching the lesson on religious grounds. However, they feared retaliation if they came forward on their own. And probably because if these teachers are part of a union, I doubt that they would have the support of the union on this matter. But they went to the Liberty Council instead. So Liberty Council, they review the lessons, and they find that the lessons proclaim the students' multiple controversial political LGBT positions and opinions as truth. They said that some of the lessons' questions violate the teens' privacy, instill confusion, unconstitutionally compel speech, and serve as a call to political action. Attorneys for Liberty Counsel then write this 40-page demand letter. And in it, here's a statement. Government, they say, is not permitted to establish a government orthodoxy on matters of sexuality and identity. And that's true. Government is not permitted to do this, but this is what's happening. I mean, we saw this happen over the weekend. This is essentially what Biden's proclamation was. It was an establishment of an orthodoxy. And it took place on the day that it might be the most important holiday that Christians observe, Resurrection Sunday. Now, and I mentioned this yesterday, and people will say, well, it's March 31st, and they've been proclaiming this day as, blah, 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 blah for years, ever since Biden took office. It's been March 31st, blah, 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 blah. I mean, okay. I mean, there's obviously a historical record for that, at least over the past couple of years, but it doesn't take away from it. it doesn't take away that there is a government orthodoxy at foot here being played out. In response to the demand letter back to Minnesota, the Osseo Area Schools, they announced just a couple of days ago, March 28th, that, quote, students themselves may choose to leave prior to or during the lesson. And then they set up, an alternative class, something on career readiness. The district stated that the request by Liberty Counsel for accommodation for teachers who declined to teach the material based on sincerely held religious beliefs had been approved and will be provided. Okay, so the teachers are also going to have an out here. According to the announcement, parents and caregivers. Oh, there's that word again. Now, here it says and caregivers, parents and caregivers, and they throw in the word and to combine the two groups. But there is a move afoot to just get rid of parents altogether. Let's just call them caregivers. Let's get rid of this whole parental notion. Parents and caregivers will continue to be allowed to sign up for an appointment to physically visit the school to review the learning materials, and if they so desire, opt their children out of the class by filling out a form. In the demand letter, Liberty Counsel attorneys took issue with the physical visit requirement in the digital age and questioned whether the Osseo district was trying to prevent as many parents as possible from exercising a meaningful review of the curriculum. That's a good point. I mean, can't you put this online? Can't you put the review online? Well, I mean, if we put the review online, then we are literally opening it up to everybody. And then what kind of horrific backlash would befall them? Yeah, I don't see them putting this online. I mean, I agree with the attorneys here that, come on, we're in the digital age. Surely you can put this up there for all to see. And it might be that they want to discourage as many eyes on it as possible in terms of the parents coming and physically seeing it. But really, I think they just are afraid of the incoming backlash. I mean, you could see what took place over the weekend. Again, if you're not living in a hole, you saw the public outcry of what took place on Easter Sunday. There was some scheduled event in Nashville, the Trans Day of Vengeance, I think, and they canceled it. They had to throw it off and just be done with it because of the pushback, the verbal pushback. I don't think the school district in Minnesota wants a verbal pushback, because it would unleash the floodgates if all eyes all over the place were able to go to their website and look and see what these lessons entail. According to a March 8 bulletin from the district, the purpose of the main 40-minute lesson on LGBTQIA plus. Wow, we got an I and an A and a plus in there. I wonder what do these letters even stand for? Does anybody know? All right, so here's the main purpose of the 40-minute lesson. It's to help students gain a deeper understanding of LGBTQIA plus histories and identities. Do we need to know what the letters mean? If we're not interested in a homosexual lifestyle, do we need to know what all the letters mean? Do we need to know the identities of these letters? Do we need to know their histories? I mean, it's the same argument that the left makes. We're not interested in a Christian lifestyle. We can't have prayer here in this school, or the Bible. You can't be ramming it down our throats. However, I mean, we're gonna ram this down your throats. The lesson is designed to instill in students an appreciation for the importance of using correct pronouns and respecting diverse identities. How about How about we have lessons that teach students the importance of using proper grammatical pronouns, which align with actual biological identity, which is actual truth. Because perceived identity may or may not be actual truth. And then, using correct pronouns, because I feel a particular way, so I'm not going to use the pronoun assigned to me at birth. No, not the grammatically correct pronoun. I'm going to use some other pronoun. I'm going to use some grammatically incorrect pronoun, and this is a place of education, and so we need to support grammatically incorrect pronouns. None of this makes sense. There isn't a single part of this which makes any actual sense. After the class, students will help create a brave space that is respectful of all members of our community. A brave space differs from a safe space in that it is designed to manage conflict among equals rather than avoid it, with an emphasis on mutual respect. A brave space. So now we have a brave space, and this is where we can manage our conflict. This is a space over here in the corner of the room, and we're going to come and manage it. It's a brave space. Oh boy. All right. So it was, the article says it was in 2022 that the Aseo Area Schools Board of Education laid the foundation for the annual lesson by formally resolving to acknowledge the value of the lives of our trans, lesbian, gay, bisexual, queer, intersex, two-spirit, asexual, non-binary, and gender-expansive scholars and staff. Oh, wow, that's a mouthful. So this happened in 2022, the summer of 2022. According to the district administration, 2.7% of the school district, of their 20,609 students, 2.7% fall into at least one of the 10 categories. That, okay, 2.7%. So for this small number of the population, then they're going to create all this. All of this is happening because of 2%, 2.7. Let's round up and say 3%, 3% of the population. I mean, could we extrapolate that out to the country? I mean, is it safe to say that then this school district is perhaps a microcosm of the country, and maybe 3% of the country is would fall into one of these 10 categories of, I don't know what's intersex, what's two-spirit. I don't know. I don't know. It gets to a point where they just fill up a bucket of definitions and they throw the two spirit. I'm two spirit. What, you have two spirits? What do you, what is this dualism here? I don't, asexual. I am not sexual at all. I'm asexual. I don't, so then how do you fit into this category? Because everything in this category has to do with sexuality, but you're asexual. So how does that, so if we can extrapolate this out to the whole country and say 3%, but we have to have a visibility day for this small minority, for this population. They get a month, and they get, I mean, there's another article here that I saw somewhere. I don't know that I have it in front of me, but there are like 50 days out of the year that celebrate some type of homosexual movement. 50 days out of the year. I mean, they've hijacked a month, and now they get all these other days. I mean, I don't, I guess you gotta have as many days as possible to make it visible, because there's such a small percentage of the population that aligns with this way of thinking. So they need more days of visibility, perhaps. I don't know. The resolution here in Minnesota that this board here at the Aseo Area Schools Board enacted The resolution recognizes the need to observe Pride Month and to value the students' gender identity and gender expression in an inclusive learning environment in which all students feel safe and supported. The resolution noted that 52% of the homosexual youth enrolled in its middle school and high school reported being bullied either in person or electronically in the past year. The school board resolved to eliminate transphobia and homophobia. The board resolved to establish an LGBTQIA plus employee affinity group. A promise was also made to ensure that all facility design standards include increased privacy and greater student choice in restrooms and locker rooms. Well, that's an oxymoron. You can't increase privacy, but yet give the student the choice of which bathroom they're going to use. The only way to increase privacy is to tell the boys they've got to use the boys' bathrooms and to tell the girls they've got to use the girls' bathrooms. All right, parents, if you live in the Aseo School District, and again, I might be butchering the pronunciation here. If you are here, then it's important that you understand what's happening in your school district. This resolution in 2022 that the school board put together stated that the Aseo schools would establish an entire month sometime before Pride Month each year to observe the LGBTQ History and Culture Month, because it's essential for our education system to teach the experiences, honor the history, and highlight the contributions of transgender, expansive gender, and non-binary people. So at some point before Pride Month, at some point before June, they're going to take another month and call it History and Culture Month, because they feel like it's important that the history of this group, which is a small population of the country, admittedly, but everybody needs to know about who's involved in it. And so parents, you just need to be aware this is what's happening in your school district. So will you have the spirit of the original Floridians and say, don't mess with Florida? Is that going to happen here in Minnesota? Are you going to rise up and say, don't mess with our kids? Don't mess with our kids in Minnesota. Speaking of don't mess with our kids, in 2 weeks, April 13, at every single capital in the United States of America, every single state capital, including the District of Columbia, there is a rally being held, and it's sponsored by the group Don't Mess With Our Kids. And the rally time is 1 to 3, every single capital, every single state capital. If this is something that you care about, you parents here in Florida in this school district, if this is something that you care about, or parents all over the nation, if this is something that you care about, make your voice be heard. And it's a peaceful gathering. There will be worship. There will be testimonies. There will be prayer. There will be proclamation decrees. It's a time of just gathering to make your voice be heard, because you don't like what's happening to our kids. You don't like the indoctrination. You don't like what's being ramrodded down their throats for the sake of an orthodoxy that our government wants to present to our kids in a way that it's forceful. It's in a way that, look, here's the way it is, kids. This is something that we really strongly encourage that you be involved in. Now, Christianity, no, you can't touch that with a 10-foot pole. However, I mean, this over here, you have this alternative lifestyle, and we encourage you, go after it. Matter of fact, we're going to proclaim it a day of visibility in competition with Resurrection Sunday. That's what we're up against. So April 13, I encourage you, no matter what state you're in, show up. Show up and make your voice be heard. All right. I went a little long on this segment. We'll pick this up on the other side of this break. You're listening to the Dean's List on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel and be our very best. Our customers will tell you how our products have made a difference for them. From improving immune health, regulating hormone balance, supporting gut health, to soothing the skin, even reducing the appearance of wrinkles, fine lines, and cellulite, and providing targeted support for mind, mood, energy, and even our body's own production of collagen. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in becoming your best self and fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA, we power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutLoud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back to the Dean's List, my friends. You are listening to America Out Loud Talk Radio. You can find us here Monday through Friday at the Eastern, at the 2 p.m. Eastern time slot. And no matter how you're listening and what mode you're listening and what, you know, what you're using, whether you're on iHeartRadio or whether you've downloaded the app for your iPhone, your Android, your Alexa, or whether you're just on the media player. Maybe you like to go to AmericaOutLoud.news and just listen to it live right on the media player. I like to listen to it live on the app, or maybe you're finding it in podcast. You know, we're everywhere. We are in the entire podcast network. No matter how you're listening, we're just happy that you are. Thank you for being a part of the Out Loud family. We're celebrating 8 years here. I have not been here 8 years, but Malcolm and the team, they are celebrating 8 years. And it is quite an accomplishment. It really, truly is. It's to build something from the ground up, a network of this caliber that has the voices on it that this network has. When you start a network and you have people like the Bregans, people like Peter McCullough, people like Dr. Ely, people like Tom Renz. I could go through the list. You know, matter of fact, maybe one of these days I will. I'll just go through the list. I mean, Dr. Artis. I mean, there's just so many talented, intellectual, well-spoken people on this platform. To have this going for only 8 years and have this much talent, to be surrounded by this much talent, I love it. I do. I'm happy to be a part of it. I'm happy to be on the team, and it's and I'm happy that you're listening, because this is where smart people go to get their news and information. It's true. It's true. I say it all the time. It's true. Speaking of news and information, there is a very interesting piece, and I would like to know your take on it. I'm interested in your opinion. There is a social psychologist who has written a book. I think it's out or it's about to be out. It's brand new. The book is called The Anxious Generation: How the Great Rewiring of Childhood is Causing an Epidemic of Mental Illness. His name is Jonathan. I'm going to destroy his last name here. Haidt, Haidt. So, Jonathan, I apologize that I'm not going to get your name right. But the title of this book is very interesting. And he was in an interview recently, and he's talking about some of the highlights. Specifically, he talks about the great rewiring. And he refers to this as being a 5-year period between 2010 and 2015, when society, he says, fundamentally changed for adolescents. How did it change? With the emergence of smartphones and social media. In 2010, he says, adolescents had flip phones. Most did not have high-speed internet. Over the next 5 years, by 2015, most American teens had a smartphone with a front-facing camera, high-speed internet. They have an Instagram account or some other social media account, Snapchat, whatever. And now in 2015, it's possible to spend almost every waking hour online, and many do, he says. And so my argument in the book, he says, is that all of a sudden, boom, in the blink of an eye, childhood became about sitting down and looking at a screen hour after hour, year after year. And that, I believe, is the major reason why rates of mental illness go skyrocketing around 2012, 2013, somewhere in there. This is a very interesting concept. And I don't know that it can be solely attributed to this, but it's intriguing. I think that it probably plays a very large role in all of this. He said that the very concept of social media, posting things that make you stand out because you're desperately fighting for attention, has been detrimental to adolescents because they are learning about these behaviors during puberty. And I would agree with that. I think it does become detrimental. He says, so the millennials were basically through puberty by the time all this, unfolds. That's why they're okay. He says, millennials, yeah, they're all right. The definition of Gen Z, I would say, and this is his quote, is that they went through puberty on super viral social media, on smartphones in their pockets. That was giving them notifications and calling them away from whatever they were doing, calling them away from people, calling them away from their friends. You can see them sitting in a lunchroom next to each other, each on their phone. That is not a way that a human being can grow up. And that all happened between 2010 and 2015. Well, this is why at Waterbrook we don't let them sit on their phones in the lunchroom. They're not. When they show up in the morning, they hand those things in. And then at the end of the day, they pick them up and they take them home. But during the day, we want them off. We want them engaged with each other. We want them engaged in learning. We want them engaged in actual academic function, not on social media, not on, whatever. He said that young people's brains were very vulnerable during this time period because it's the time when adolescents are supposed to be shaped by the adults in their lives. It's the adults that are supposed to shape them into knowing how to act and how to make the transition into becoming an adult. But we don't do that, he says. Instead, what we do is we hand the kids this device. Here's this phone, and you can learn from somebody else. So this is about the worst thing you can imagine to give kids at the beginning of puberty, he said. And the great rewiring radically altered the inputs to children, taking away most of what they used to do, most of their older inputs, including other people. And now it's being swapped out with a video screen. All right. So, you know, parents, if you have a preteen, does that, you know, 11, 12, 13-year-old, do they have a phone? And if they do have a phone, how you know, what is their what's the word I'm looking for? How do you limit it? How do you limit the activity on that phone? How do you limit what comes in? Is it just screen time? You just say, okay, you get an hour a day, you get 2 hours or whatever, you get 30 minutes. Or is it even more detailed than that? Do you have parental controls on the phone and there are only certain things that come in? And by the way, I'll just put this out here. If you do plug in parental, you know, whatever guidelines, guideposts, guardrails, you've got to know that your kids are pretty smart and they're going to find the workarounds. They are. They're going to find ways to get around whatever parental guidelines are on that phone. You have to go in with that assumption. You have to go in making that assumption, I think. And therefore, you have to educate yourself on how to put guardrails around the guardrails. I'm just going to throw that out there. Jonathan, the Haight, the social psychologist who's written this book, said another mistake that parents have made is being overly protective of their children. Okay, because it's the real world out there. This is what we have now. This is what we have to deal with. The smartphones are a thing. And they're everywhere. They are ubiquitous. And so, you know, now we have to walk this high wire tightrope act. And he says there's this other problem here of swinging the pendulum to the other side where parents become overly protective of their children in the real world while not setting boundaries and watching them in the digital world. For human children, he says, the best kind of play is a group, mixed age group out in the neighborhood. They make their own games. They make their own rules. They enforce their own rules. That's how you basically mature for a democratic society, he said. But beginning in the 1980s, we began to get very afraid. We begin to get these milk cartons with the missing child on them. Even though true abduction is very rare, Americans got scared. They began to clamp down on free play and childhood independence, he says. And they think that they're being good parents by always keeping the children supervised. That's the safest thing to do. Well, it is safe in the sense that external harm won't come to them, he says. But as rates of childhood death have gone down and down and down from all causes, they're now going up and up and up from suicide. We're blocking our children's development. So this is the other half of the story, the very sudden and complete replacement of a play-based childhood with the phone-based childhood. And that's why all of a sudden in 2012, Gen Z gets anxious and Gen Z gets depressed. There are a few things in the world that get better when you drop them, and you have to drop them periodically. You have to challenge them. They have to face obstacles, he later added. So muscle and bone and the immune system are all anti-fragile. If you take it easy on your muscles, take it easy on your bones, they get weak and brittle. It's a principle of human psychology that we grow by being toughened. And so that's why kids seek out risk. And the possibility of getting hurt is actually part of what makes it beneficial, because then they learn how to face risk and how to not get hurt. In the 90s, when we said no more risk, you're not going to do anything that could possibly get you hurt, we blocked that process and our kids began getting more fragile. Well, I think there's probably some truth to this. I mean, I remember being little and and climbing a tree and seeing how high I could get up there. I mean, I wanted to get up to the very tippy top, and then I'd look down. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to climb back down. And it seems simple. You're going to go back down the way you got up, and that's just what we did. And I remember once falling out of the tree and landing on my back and not being able to breathe for a few minutes, thinking I was going to die. I'm laying there on the ground thinking, holy cow, what's happening to me? Why can't I breathe? Didn't understand this concept of getting the wind knocked out of you. I mean, it's a thing. But is this the only thing here? Is this, what do you think about his argument, his premise that the pendulum swinging to both sides? Is it simply just the fault of social media? Is it simply that our kids are just engaged 100% of their time? And maybe not even 100%, maybe 90%, maybe 80%, a large portion of their time and fixated on the screen and taking this information in and then offering comparisons, comparing their own lifestyle to what they see out there, their friends doing. The pictures on social media, everybody is having a blast. There's always so much fun. And then you see this picture. And then you think, holy smokes, that must be what's going on all the time. Whether you think that consciously or not, that's the message that's fed to your brain, is that, wow, I remember how much fun they were having. And then that becomes your point of comparison. They're having a blast. And the reality of your life is you're not having a blast. But that's the reality of everybody's life. We don't have a blast 24/7. It's not super fun all the time. But that message sticks with young adolescents. Okay. It took me longer to figure out, he says, what happened for boys, but it's been a very interesting and a very sad story. Boys, it turns out, have been withdrawing from the real world since the 70s and 80s. Boys are less likely to graduate from high school, less likely to go to college, less likely to get master's degrees, PhDs, become doctors, lawyers. Boys are dropping out of society. And a big part of that, we believe, is that the virtual world has gotten so enticing. Adolescent boys care a lot about sex. They're really motivated by it. You have to learn all kinds of skills, and it's very scarce. But just go online. You have the most amazing, vivid pictures available to you. And boys love adventure. They love teamwork. They love sports. They love competing. But it's hard to make a team, and there's all kinds of challenges there. But just turn on your Xbox, and you've got a team versus team situation. So we've made life easier and easier for boys, which is a terrible thing to do to them. So they don't exert themselves. Boys are not doing the things that would turn them into men. This is a very interesting, this is a very interesting piece here. It's a very interesting statement. And a lot of this I agree with. Where are the men? I mean, look around. Do you are we filling safe spaces and now brave spaces with boys? Where are the men? Well, I mean, they're all wearing a dress. No, they're not all wearing a dress. No, not all of them. Absolutely not all of them. But there is this movement afoot to destroy manhood, and it's. He says from the 70s and 80s, and that's when the feminism really took root. Feminazis is what Rush used to call them. And it was this whole idea of empowering women, which there's nothing wrong with empowering women, but at the sake of destroying manhood. Now, I talked about this the other day that in his acceptance speech for his honorary degree, Booker Washington talked about the haves versus the have-nots, and you have these two classes of people. And then Harvard, in his words, was doing a fantastic job by lifting up one group. but doing it in such a way that they didn't tear down the other. But that's what's happened now. We had to lift up women by tearing down, you know, men. Well, why can't the rising tide lift all boats? Why can't we lift up everybody? And why can't we do it through education? And now we have to tear down one gender by you know, telling people you can be whatever gender you want. Now it's not just men and women. It's just, it's gender. We're going to go after gender. And, you know, it's reverted back to racism as well. We have to destroy one race by elevating the others. And this is what has infiltrated our education system. It's prevalent. It's throughout. And it's what needs to change. And I think it is changing because our eyes are open to it. And our eyes have to continue to be open to it. All right, I went long again. I'm up against the break. We will pick this up on the other side. You're listening to The Dean's List on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
When God, through his grace and mercy, gave us free will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutLoud.news, a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Lean, pure, with premium ingredients. Global Healing's pure plant protein offers 20 grams of protein per scoop, and it's a perfect way to maintain and build lean muscle while indulging yourself. It combines enzymes and probiotics to maximize nutrient absorption, improving digestion and your gut health. Available in vanilla and chocolate flavors, elevate your protein consumption while supporting your overall wellness with pure plant protein. Go to AmericaOutLoud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
Welcome back to the Dean's List. So this article here that we're diving into, it is called Top Psychologist Blames Smartphones, Social Media for Decay of Gen Z and Rise of Transgenderism. If you want to look it up, it's at the Daily Wire. I'm not sure who the author is. But he brings up some interesting points. And then here he says, so there's very important older research by Nicholas Christakis and James Fowler. Now, in this portion, he's talking about comparison. And, you know, he says there's also this constant social comparison. If you have an 11 or 12-year-old girl on Instagram several hours a day or on TikTok several hours a day, most of what she sees is happy girls living beautiful lives. And then he asks this question, is this going to be good for her? I mean, it's rhetorical, but the answer is obviously no. It's not going to be good for her. He says, of course, social comparison is part of being young, but let it be within your small group of friends. Don't let it be among a billion people, many of whom are gorgeous and fake. All right, and this is important. This is a very important thing because you've got these early teens, these preteens, and comparison is a natural. And it's natural for all of humanity. But it as he suggests, it should be done within our small sphere, not with comparing ourselves to a billion other people. So he talks about this older research by Nicholas Christakis and James Fowler, where they looked at, he says they had a gigantic health data set called the Framingham Heart Study. And they were able to see that if one person takes up smoking, their friends are more likely to take up smoking. But actually, he says, so are their friends' friends, and even friends' friends' friends, he said. So the things we do spread out through social network. We affect each other. Now it turns out when you're looking at emotions, girls and women, when they study women, when a woman is depressed, that spreads out to her network. This is very intriguing. Whereas when a man is depressed, it doesn't. Women talk about their feelings. They're more connected in that way. Girls are connecting on social media, where it just turns out in many communities, the more anxious and depressed you are, the more support you get. The more extreme your symptoms, the more you get likes and followers. Of course, it's good to destigmatize social and mental illness. We don't want people to be ashamed, but it's a terrible idea to valorize it, to tell young people, you know what? The more you have this, the more popular you'll be, the more support you'll get. And so you get this explosion, not just of anxiety, he says. Anxiety is in part. I think, he says, the spread is sociogenetically. It's called from social causes, not from internal causes. But we get it for dissociative identity disorder, and it seems to be the case for gender dysphoria as well. So he's saying, you know, we don't have anxiety or depression or gender dysphoria because of something happening in us internally. It's happening socially. We're watching it happen over here. And so, by golly, I mean, it should probably happen to us. We're watching all the support and all the likes and all the, you know, the follows that this person is receiving because of their whatever, their anxiety, their depression, their gender dysphoria. And he's suggesting that that then spreads socially. When asked directly if the data demonstrates that the increase in transgenderism is above and beyond just the phenomenon of coming out and increased awareness, he said emphatically, yes, of course it is. Because it happens in clusters of girls, he said. It happens in clusters of girls who had no previous gender dysphoria when they were young. So it's very different from the kinds of gender dysphoria cases that we've known about for decades. It's a real thing, he says. But what happened, especially when girls got, was YouTube and Instagram early. But then especially TikTok, girls just, you know, girls get sucked into these vortexes, as it were. And they take on each other's purported mental illnesses. And here we are, and we see this explosion of transgenderism. And we call it an explosion, even though it's still only a small percentage of the population. 3% is a small amount. And yet we call it this explosion. And I ask, would this be happening if kids were not being influenced in some way, shape, form, or fashion? And the answer is yes, they are. They are being influenced by it. You know, his take is they're being influenced by it in social media, which is true. And they're also being influenced by it in their schools, by supposed loving and caring adults, by teachers and counselors who are supposed to be looking out after them. But instead, there is this network of influence that is shaping the hearts and minds of an entire generation, of an entire generation. So this is, you know, this is why we've got to talk about it. This is why we have to make you aware. We have to make society aware. I encourage you. You know, pull up this article. I'm sure you can find it on the internet. It is a very fascinating read, and there is a lot of things in here that we could mine and that we could, you know, begin to implement. I think one of those things, obviously, is to, you know, for parents to be in charge of their children's social media. And I mean, be in charge of it, you know, not just give them, you know, you've got an hour or 2 hours, not just give them a time frame, but be in charge of it. Monitor what's coming in. Monitor what they're viewing. Monitor who they are comparing their life to. That is the thing right there. Who are you comparing your life to? So we used to read the great books. I mean, we do at Waterbrook, but it used to be part of an American education where students would read the great books and they would have somebody great, somebody historical, somebody who achieved amazing things that they could project themselves against, that they could compare their life to, that they could emulate, that they could say, that's, I want to be like that person. I mean, kids are trying to figure it out. They're trying to discover what they're going to be like, who they're going to follow. You know what? They're at this very important stage in their lives. And as parents, it's important for us to put in front of them people of greatness. It's important for us to surround them with people of greatness. I mean, this is why, you know, when I suggest books to you, they're about people of greatness. You know, find yourself a book on George Washington, a biography about George Washington. You know, I encourage you, have your kids read Up from Slavery. Have them read about Frederick Douglass, George Washington, Carver. Surround them with people of greatness. Encourage them to compare themselves to people of greatness. Yeah, they might seem small in the shadow of such an individual, but it gives them something to strive for, something to become. Let's get them out of this echo chamber, this bubble echo, you know, thing where they are just taking on the anxiety of others, taking on the depression of others. I'm not trying to downplay anxiety or depression. It's a very real thing. And I'm not trying to make light of it. But the research is clear that it tends to move in groups and packs, especially when the girls are concerned. And we need to give young boys strong men to look up to. Mm-hmm. Let's bring back masculinity. Let's bring it back. A very interesting article. Again, it's called Top Psychologists Blame Smartphones, Social Media for Decay of Gen Z and Rise of Transgenderism. So look it up, read it, and decide, you know, what do you think? Do you agree with him? Do you agree with this concept that social media is the thing? I would love to hear from you on it. I really would. Read it and then, you know, email me. Or if you go to AmericaOutloud.news, there's a comment section. If you go to my host page, there's a comment section there. You know, reach out, reply. I do love to hear from listeners, and I'd love to get the conversation going. All right, that's all the time we have for today, America. Thank you for joining me. Encourage your friends and family to get on the Dean's List. Let's unite to renovate the age.